protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can always have them stored online. Learn more simple disaster prep tips at ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, August 18th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Shutdown orders started sweeping the country in mid-March. In the immediate aftermath, our internet usage jumped, nearly 25%. But with lockdowns easing up in many places, where are we now? Our reporter Lillian Rizzo will break down new analysis of our pandemic internet habits after these headlines. The U.S. Commerce Department issued new restrictions on the Chinese telecom giant Huawei yesterday. Now, if overseas companies want to sell chips made with U.S. technology to Huawei, they have to get a license. The move expands on the Trump administration's previous restrictions on Huawei, which are meant to cut the company off from crucial components. President Trump reiterated concerns yesterday that Huawei's equipment could be used to spy on Americans, an allegation that Huawei has long denied. And seed financing. It's the earliest stage of startup funding and a big part of many successful tech companies' origin stories. But new data shows that during the pandemic, first-time entrepreneurs are having a tough time convincing venture capitalists to invest. Here's WSJ Pro reporter Mark Vertebedian.
Essentially, this is raising the barriers of entry into Silicon Valley for first-time entrepreneurs or those that are outside of the insiders club. Silicon Valley's for a long time been known as a very insular scene where it's hard to get funding if you're an unknown quantity. And what we're seeing is this is even more so the case during the pandemic, where investors are really resorting to backing entrepreneurs that they know or that fellow investors have invested in them before. I think also the Zoom issue is part of it because, you know, they can't meet entrepreneurs in person, really. I think if you're only able to make a deal over Zoom, that's just viewed as more risky versus if this is somebody that they know and somebody that they've met before and done business with before. It's just much more comforting.
Also changing in the pandemic, how we use the internet. We'll tell you all about it after the break.
To protect her home and family in a disaster, Karen was willing to wade through water, mud, and insurance paperwork.
Yeah, I can do this.
You go, Karen! By simply understanding and updating what her insurance covers and doesn't cover now, she'll be better prepared no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
If nothing else, 2020 has shown us just how much can be made virtual. Work, school, yoga classes, a few members of our podcast team are even getting ready for virtual bridal and baby showers. So it should come as no surprise that the pandemic has drastically changed Americans' internet habits. Our reporter Lillian Rizzo worked on an analysis of some of the changes we've seen, and she joins us now to explain what she found. Lillian, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we know that internet usage surged in mid-March, but can you talk a little bit about those numbers and what kind of changes we saw?
Yeah, so mid-March was when most, if not all, of the country started staying home because there were shelter-in-place orders in almost all states. And unsurprisingly, everybody was online, working, going to school. What was most interesting was that peak hours, which are usually when you get home from work, around seven or so, were insanely higher than the usual. So peak remained peak, but kind of on steroids. And then during the day started looking a bit more like peak hours, but still never actually got there. So you could still see the differences as time went on throughout the day. And then nighttime, usually after midnight, is when it's, you know, the least congested on the network. And that even showed a spike in usage, but it was still far lower than what we normally see.
We've seen those numbers start to fall off since then. How come?
A few reasons. One being, you know, shelter-in-place orders are lifted. And so there's been various phases of people going back out into the world. Another was school ending. Not only were parents at home working, but their kids were at home, or even, you know, older students, I should say. and there was a lot of Zoom videos happening. And so that's paused, obviously. And then a big reason that a lot of people suspected, you know, from when I started reporting on this earlier, when the pandemic started, was that the weather got warmer. And so people were able to go outside, go to the park, go for a run, and not have to constantly be streaming or using their internet or gaming as they were during the winter months of the beginning of the pandemic.
Lillian, we've been talking a lot about how cities have been impacted by the pandemic. Many city dwellers have sort of scattered to the winds to work remotely. How are we seeing that in internet usage?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Pretty early on, when, you know, we saw this big spike in usage, we saw a lot of places that normally would be dead in the winter, New England, for example, see a big increase. A lot of people probably going to their vacation homes or finding a space there, or maybe kids going back from cities into their parents' homes. But so a lot of places we would see quiet usage, that surged. But still, the majority of usage was still in urban metropolitan cities, especially places on the West Coast where you see a lot of the tech community working, especially because they went home earlier by a few days than, you know, the rest of the U.S. But so it kind of mirrored peak hours where, you know, urban centers are often where there's a lot of internet usage, and that just like amplified. The outskirts, you know, which would be earlier times in the day, we started seeing that surge as well. So it was pretty interesting to see that and to see how all of the network was really being used simultaneously and not just in certain pockets, which is what we would have seen during, you know, normal times.
How have all of these changes impacted the internet providers? You would think that gigantic changes in demand and location would present a problem for them. So has it?
I wouldn't say it's presented a problem, but it's led to technicians being out there working almost around the clock in certain circumstances, especially in the beginning when it was just an immediate surge. You know, there's constant upgrades being made to the network, you know, all of the time, but when congestion started happening, they needed more boots on the ground. So there was far more investment in the network than during normal times. And also, you know, like I said, this is happening all of the time. Internet providers usually have a year to 18 months of like headroom of bandwidth. And they started seeing that evaporate. So at a point, there was no headroom. But now, since we've seen the numbers go down and it's been a lot slower usage in the summer, not normal, but still slower than it was at the outset of this, they've been able to gain back some of the ground on having some cushion for, you know, the future.
What kinds of changes are they making to try and give themselves some wiggle room?
So this is kind of wonky, but so there's the term node splitting. And so it's basically like taking a pipe that's servicing a certain area or a neighborhood and literally splitting that. And so that way you get more usage coming out of two pipes, I guess. That's part of it. Other parts are just, you know, constant maintenance, which I guess is a bit of a boring response, but it's the truth. It's more of like a constant maintenance, splitting nodes, just making sure things are up to par. Obviously, in urban areas, that's where you're seeing happen a lot more, but even rural areas and or just less populated than urban areas were getting the same type of assistance.
Now, lots of tech companies have said they're staying remote until next summer at the earliest. And generally between work and school, we're looking at kind of an uncertain next few months. How are these broadband providers thinking about the future?
Well, so from what I've heard, they're thinking that we probably won't go back to where we were in March, April, where we saw this insane surge, just because now remote learning in a lot of areas will be half remote, half in school. Some people are going back to the office on alternate days. It's still warmer weather, but they're still prepared for increased usage. So where we are right now is far lower than March, but it's far higher than January. And so they kind of need to keep doing this maintenance and keeping an eye on the network, making sure we have enough capacity to all run smoothly. The other thing I guess I would say is they don't know, like us. So if there is a second wave that happens in certain areas or in certain swaths of the country, you'll see maybe those areas look like they did in March, April. Some think that it will never get back to where it was in March, April usage-wise, and some think this is a wild card and maybe it will. So I guess they're preparing for the highest usage, but hoping it only hits medium.
All right, our reporter Lillian Rizzo, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. As always, we've got more tech stories on our website, wsj.com, so check us out there. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.